on the witch, may we burn her?
Burn her!
Burn her!
Burn her!
She is a witch.
She looks like one.
Bring her forward.
I'm not a witch. I'm not a witch.
But you are dressed as one.
They dressed me up like this. And this is in my nose is a false one.
Well?
Well, we did do the nose.
The nose?
And the hat. But she is a witch.
Did you dress her up like this?
No!
Yes.
Yeah, a bit. She has got a wart.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt.
A newt?
I got better.
Burn her anyway!
Quiet! There are ways of telling whether she is a witch. Tell me, what do you do with witches?
Burn them!
And what do you burn apart from witches?
For witches!
Good. So, why do witches burn?
Because they're made of wood.
Good. So, how do we tell whether she is made of wood?
Build a bridge out of her.
Ah, but can you not also make bridges out of stone? Does a wood sink in water?
No.
It floats.
It floats over into the pond.
What also floats in water?
Bread. Apples.
Very small rocks.
Cider.
A great gravy.
Cherries.
Mud.
Churches.
Lead.
A duck.
Exactly. So, logically,
if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of wood.
And therefore...
Away!
Are you ready for some ghosts to call? Hunting ghosts on a ghosting wall. Sun and sky there will do what they do, and you'll find them all on ghosting like you.
Moshi.
How do you know she is a witch?
Oh my god.
Burn her, witch! Burn her!
Burner!
Oh, I loved that.
Wonderful. That was, awesome. That was a good way to start the show.
Yeah.
We're all
yeah.
cracking up in here now, having fun. So we got to do that every week. We just got to find something stupid before the bumper song.
Oh, that was totally awesome. This is Ghostly Talk.
Yes.
And I am Doug.
And I'm Scott L.
And I am Karma.
Awesome. And we've got Will, of course, manning the IRC chat rooms and the soundboard and all that kind of good stuff.
Yep, I'm here. I'm always here.
Thank you.
Busy.
And
you know, his hands are a blur right now.
Ghostly Talk is, of course, aired live on Sunday nights from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Pioneer Radio. Mm-hmm. Pioneer is found at pioneer.rolo.net. That's R-O-L-O.net. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our website is Ghostly Talk, so ghostlytalk.com.
Yes.
And lots of action on the GoFreeTalk.com website.
It's quite a week without saying the details.
Yeah.
But I think things are starting to lighten up around here. We're all kind of coming back down, I think. And we hope, coming off the Thursday night that we did, we hope that that helped. We understand also there was a couple of calls that came in by a friend of ours now. A friend of ours now. And I don't know the website.
It's like KDKprankcalls.com or something.
We got Frank. You know what? We got done good, and we're good sports about it, though. We actually had a good time with that. When we found out, we're like, all right. You know,
I was listening to the archives, I almost fell off my chair. I was like, what the peep?
Yeah.
My mom was like, oh my god, you. Give Doug a hug for me. That guy was so rude.
Oh,
but it turned out it was
yeah.
It was fun. We got a kick.
It was a character, but the prank call sites they have characters.
Yeah.
That repeated. You know, they call up things like Target and try and return things, or they call up.
You said that guy that had called that was supposedly 80 and dying or whatever was supposed to be a woman.
Right.
He sounded like George Burns.
Well, yeah, but. The character, I think, is a woman. I don't know. I'd have to check.
Sylvia Brown. That's what it sounded like to me. Personally.
I visualized him like in a purple silk robe sitting around with a big fat cigar. That was my visualization of
him. But that was a character portrayed for our amusement. And amusing. It was fun. It also every one of the callers that called in character.
They had great points.
They had awesome points about what we were talking about. You know, the euthanizing old people, and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, they just had point after point after point. We got to discuss it with their characters. And
so regardless,
that was awesome.
I think looking back now,
KTK or KDK prank calls. I don't remember.
Look that up. We'll obviously listen.
Yeah,
in
order to be topical, they had to have known, okay, this is a special Ghostly Talk, and it's a response to the Sunday show, so they had to know that it was what was going on.
So that was pretty heavy. We went through that night, you know, and looking back, at least they can look back now and chuckle a little bit, too.
Yeah.
There was a fun spin on it.
Who played the porn music behind it? I think
I was responsible for that one.
That came right in at the right time, because that's exactly what she thought.
Yeah, that was fun, though. We'll have to link them up to the site or something like that. Because that gentleman actually went on our message board and said, okay, you got me. And we responded like, hey, man, thanks. That was cool.
It rocked.
It seemed like he was surprised. Like, you know, I'm sure most people aren't too happy to find out that happened to him. But, you know, we thought it was funny. We got a kick out of it. So.
It came out of the blue, but it brought up good points. We got to talk about a lot of the different things. So
we hope you guys feel better about that now. I know we feel better about it. But for everybody concerned, the people that had the guts to call in, I don't want to say, you know, you're all spineless, but the people that had the guts to actually call in and go, look, here's my concerns, you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously the people,
I have to thank every one of them.
Yeah, exactly. Every single person they called,
including the characters.
Including the characters they called in, because they brought up a great conversation also. So it was a lot of fun. And
I tried to call in, but the phone was busy.
Yeah, well, we're too busy getting slammed by a car.
Busy. I was going to actually kind of prank call, but...
Oh.
Yeah?
But I would have said who I was.
Yeah.
You would have known.
Yeah.
We would have figured it out, probably.
No, I was going to make a comment about the pizza, that's all.
Did we even have pizza that night? from?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, yeah.
See, I knew that.
I thought Bonnie went on Gut.
No, I knew it.
Ah, Will brought it.
Get on the mic and tell everybody that, so everybody knows, Will.
Yes, I had to go get the pizza.
Excellent.
It's already late, maybe even later, but it's okay.
I think it's my turn to grab pizza. I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, I think you're on pizza duty next weekend.
All right.
We'll have to work that out. But
speaking of next weekend, we've got a huge guest lineup for the upcoming show.
Yeah, next weekend is Diane Goodman Larson. It's coming out.
And that's really timely as well, because she has a new line of...
She's working on some skin cream lotions.
She
didn't really give me too many details, but
so,
she emailed me today. I haven't had a chance to return it. Sorry, she's listening.
I could use some of that. So that's a sample.
But these are actually really good timing, because...
Valentine's Day.
Yeah, Valentine's Day is February 14th, and then she's going to be on February 15th. And, of course, a really neat Valentine's thing,
yeah,
you know, would be skin cream lotion, especially... You know, homeopathic, natural, that kind of stuff, and then you.
As long as it doesn't heat up.
Yeah, that would be the specialty stores, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
When you blow on it.
That's good though.
Yeah, if you're putting it on other places besides like your cheeks.
That's
my
what
cheeks
I meant.
Are so dry right now.
Well, yeah, your cheeks. You put that on your cheeks. You're lying.
Not those cheeks.
Yeah. Bottom cheeks.
Yeah. So Valentine's Day is coming up next weekend, next Saturday actually, and Diane Goodman Larson's coming on tonight though. Tonight. Let's talk about tonight.
Tonight we are having.
You know, I left my watch at home because of the situation before I came on my way
oh,
over here.
Yeah.
I just was like, woo, and I just ran out and I forgot my watch, so I don't have a watch on me now.
Well,
but probably in about 20 minutes, we're going to be having Mr. Pat Fitzhugh.
Yes, Pat Fitzhugh is coming on the show to talk about The Bell Witch.
Yes, and if you don't know who Pat Fitzhugh is concerning The Bell Witch, then you haven't studied The Bell Witch before. Because Pat Fitzhugh, basically, he's the guru.
He is the
guru on The Bell Witch. He knows everything there is to know about The Bell Witch.
He went to actual, like... churches and cemeteries and records offices and really, really researched the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I personally wish I could do with any topic. I wish I'd, you know, pick a topic and then just, like, really, really dig in like he did.
Yeah, learn everything there is to learn about.
Yep, my life path did not end up doing that. I ended up being, becoming a ghost hunter.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, and doing
an amateur
radio show and stuff.
Hmm? That whole story about the Bell Witch is just, like, intriguing. I read it on his website, and I was, that's a very physical.
Yeah, story. She terrorized an entire town. I mean, she really did. She was not. I mean, it started with the one family, and she had this intense hatred toward the man, you know, the head of the household. But she didn't stop there. She would be sometimes in two simultaneous places at once, saying stuff. You know,
well,
I mean,
the thing
you know,
that makes
the,
it a different story is that there's so much activity.
Yeah,
brutal activity. I mean, with blatant
slapping and even
and there was this there was actual if I. We actually did a show on this previously, got a long time ago, about the Bell Witch, all about the Bell Witch, and we talked about that pretty in depth, and there was, if I can remember correctly, after Mr. Johnson, but I may have the names wrong.
I don't know, I didn't study, I didn't have time.
Will's actually printing out the stuff right now.
Oh, good.
But,
yeah.
I believe it was Mr. Johnson, he was like the man of the house, and he was killed by her.
Right.
Yeah, that vial that they had found.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they called it brandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then they gave it to the cat. And the
cat
died.
Right.
Yeah,
so you prepared better than us right now.
I was absolutely floored by it.
But did you read the part where at the funeral for Mr. Johnson, she was actually behind the funeral, like the funeral procession, laughing?
Yes, I did. And then
they heard a laugh. I don't think they actually saw her materialize, but she was laughing.
But they also she was telling the daughter what was it, Jennifer? Was it Jennifer?
I don't remember.
Not to marry the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up breaking up with him.
Well, yeah, this lady, this witch, this is the first witch I ever heard of in history. Was a total gossiper.
Oh,
total
yeah.
Gossiper.
How can you be that brutal? But and then it seemed like she was somewhat of a Christian, because whenever that they had the neighbors over, and he's like, in all God's name, please, whatever, and she like left them alone.
Right.
So, I mean, it seemed like she had somewhat of a Christian background. That's how I interpret it. And then she would slap the hell out of the kids.
Poor
rip
kid.
Their blankets off.
Yeah. Definitely a lot of activity.
Lots
a lot
of
paranormal activity going on there.
Well, the one thing I know when we talked about it last time, we equated a lot of it with poltergeist activity. It was real, as far as, like, you know, breaking it down scientifically and the five stages of, like, poltergeist activity, because it did start out kind of, you know, mellow. I remember, I think, if I remember correctly, we're going to find out for sure here in a minute. What triggered it was Mr. Johnson, I believe, was on his property walking around, and he saw that dog-type...
Something running to the corn.
It was half, what was it, rabbit and... Rabbit and dog. He had, like, the rabbit head.
Mm. Yeah, and it ran
and
into
it
the cornfield,
yes,
or something, and
he shot at it.
He
didn't really, like, explode, but it just, like, kind of, like, just disappeared. And that's what triggered it. I guess that's what called her out, and she, like, that's when she started coming around.
Yeah.
Kate started to come around, so to say. I have a mouthful of food, I'm sorry. Please talk while I finish this.
That's okay. What a story. I mean, what were your thoughts? Like, have you ever heard of anything similar? No, not at all.
I mean, I had heard you guys bring up the Bell Witch before, and I just went to his website, and I read a lot on it, and I've never heard of people being smacked and that physical. Usually it's just like a present, you know, you know that something's there, or you see, like, the shadow walk by really quick, but... Never for a ghost to make themselves that well known.
Well, there's different documented cases where there's been, like, physical activity where there's slapping, scratching,
mm-hmm,
a very strong characteristic, but not as, like, ominous, I'd say, as the Bell Witch, where, like, for example, Mr. Johnson's dead, and she's sitting there laughing about it.
Right.
Where you know there's someone there that doesn't want good to happen to you, so to say. Very, very upfront. How would you say? Really in your face. That's the only way I could really put it, I think.
Basically had a part in your death.
Yeah.
From what it seemed like with that vial.
And that's the first case. I mean, I'm sure there have been people that have been scared out of their wits to the point where they had a heart attack. I mean, it can very easily happen, I imagine. But that's the first case I've ever seen or read about where someone actually died as a result of a spirit of some sorts, where the spirit was responsible, like you said, for their death. So, I mean, it's
I
want to
go there.
Yeah.
I want to go there.
To Adams,
Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's not too far from where my grandma lives in Tennessee. Grandma L lives down there. We were just talking about that before the show, actually. And she's offered to put us up.
Well, let's go.
She's offered to put us up for, you know, however long we want to stay. And, boy, you know what? You guys are never going to want to leave because all she does is cook.
I knew you were going to say that because I was going to say, I probably want to stay there too long because I'd probably come back 20 pounds heavier.
Oh, we'll be a wreck.
Because grandmothers love to cook.
We could, like, actually, I think we should do an experiment and, like, measure our gas mileage on the way there and then measure our gas mileage on the way back and see how much weight,
like,
we put on the car.
It'll be like
I thought
three.
You were going to say something about, like, gas.
No, not gas. No. I mean, just...
not that kind
much
of
more
fresh.
Yeah.
Gas.
But, yeah, so we're going to be talking about the Bell Witch all night tonight. Like we said, the guy, the man.
The one.
Who is there.
And he also runs bellwitch.org.
That's
right, bellwitch.org.
That's
yeah.
the site to go to get all this information.
I got to it right just from our website.
Yeah. There's a link up at ghostlytalk.com.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And you just click on Pat Fitzhugh's name, and it takes you right there. While we're broadcasting live, because like I said, Ghostly Talk is broadcast live on Pioneer from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
While we're broadcasting live, we're also in the chat rooms. So if you get a chance, go to, if you're a member of Ghostly Talk, you can and have an IR, have Java loaded within your browser.
Mm-hmm.
You can click on the Java IRC link,
yeah,
and it will let you in, and you can, you know, chat with us. Also, if you go to pioneer.rolo.net, there's a text chat link in that control button down toward the bottom,
mm-hmm,
and that'll let you in. Of course, you can also use any MIRC client, or I'm sorry, IRC client, such as MIRC at MIRC.co.uk, and join the Undernet network,
mm-hmm,
as Pound Pioneer Radio is the name of the channel.
Is that screen that, like, when you click on? I know it's that when Ghostly Talk isn't live, or I try to go through Pioneer, this thing pops up and it's like
the gray screen.
No, it's like a yellow, oranges, and brown. It looks like it has pillars on it, and it has like when you click on it, it's like in French or something, and then you have to pick the language.
I've never seen that.
It comes up, and then sometimes it'll disappear, and then it'll go right to the chat.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's happened a few times. I'm like...
Well, it's good that you brought that up, actually, because I was going to mention that. I've seen a bit of a trend on our website and other places where people have been having problems accessing the chat room.
Through that Java
Java link, which is going to be the easiest way to get in there for a lot of people. A lot of people don't really know what MIRC is. We all do, because...
We use it, yeah, we're geeks. Yeah.
But a lot of people don't.
MIRC.
Well, see, what happens is that those things on the websites, those are Java applets, and you need to be running Java on your computer somehow, and it needs to be able to load and initialize and do all its stuff.
Well, actually,
so that's a little more difficult than if you had an actual program.
And
there's an actual program, just like your Outlook Express is an actual program that lets you read mail,
yeah.
Even though you can read mail on a web interface kind of thing.
Same exact thing.
You know, a lot of people use this Outlook Express to read mail. Well, same thing for chat. You can either use the Java applet that may or may not work. Hopefully it works, because that's going to be the easiest.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't work, you can always get a program, and the program is called MIRC.
I totally forgot what that stood for.
I don't know either, but it's MIRC is what they call it, and it's a shareware program. Mm. You can use it for free and then you're supposed to register it if you continue using it, although it still lets you use it.
Maybe
you don't have to.
Maybe that's what I'm getting into, because I actually registered into it, and then I confirmed the password, and then when I tried to get back into it, it said it was invalid.
Oh, okay.
I'm like... But it only happens sometimes. And then one time it came up, and then it went away and let me right into the chat room.
Wow.
Well, I know what the...
MIRC is a program at mirc.co.uk.
There you go.
And it's you can download it and install it on your computer and use it to chat with us.
I know if you're using Internet Explorer, for example, for you cable users out there, most people use the Microsoft Internet Explorer.
That's true. I know.
Personally,
I use Firebird. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say it. Yeah, that's like the best web browser I've ever seen in my life. Let's talk a little tech talk for you. If you want a killer web browser, you need to go, what's it? Just look it up in Google.
Just go to Mozilla.org.
Yeah, Mozilla.org and download the Firebird.
Yeah.
It's their web browser. It is the coolest web browser.
It's small. It's fast. Well, once it loads,
Internet Explorer
fast.
And strip all the garbage off of it.
Yep.
All that spyware and all that crap that gets thrown on your machine. It's stripped down, it's simple, it works fast, it does it all. There are little differences, some of the JavaScripting and the things that you run...
Does not work.
Doesn't work, but I'm willing to give that up, personally.
Yeah.
But you can... I know in Internet Explorer, which is the most widely used web browser, you go to Tools...
And down to Internet Options.
And then go to your...
Advanced
tab. And go down that line, you'll see a thing on there that says enable Java functions.
Right.
You check in that, and you shouldn't have any problem popping in going to the chat room, for example, through the Java client.
There's also a button right on that screen that you talked about.
Yeah.
Where you go to the advanced tab, and you see all those things with check marks or not.
Yeah.
There's a button that says set defaults or restore defaults or use defaults. If you click that default button,
it automatically turns on the Java. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you can just click that button. And then do apply okay, and then you'll be able to use the Java applet.
There you go. So there's your lesson for the day. That actually will help. I think that will help a lot of people out, though, because I know I've seen a bit of a trend on all the forms of communication on our site where people are like, I can't get into the chat room. This is driving me nuts, you know. I always see a couple after the show, I get home to load the archive up, and I'll see, I can't get in. Ah, I hate you. Bye. And I'm like, oh, geez, okay. So if you're listening, that might help you out.
Yeah.
It happens
to me, but I eventually get in.
Oh, okay.
You just keep clicking.
So another thing, if you keep clicking and refreshing, it'll eventually let you in. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's just something to think about. Hopefully it'll give you guys a hand. So, yeah, we got Pat Fatuga on the night. Anything else new? I mean, I know we've like burned ourselves out for the week here already. We did it on Thursday, a four-hour stint, you know, back and forth. And
How long did that archive end up being?
It was,
almost
4 hours.
Almost
it
4 hours.
It was like 3 hours and like... 36
Yeah,
minutes.
It was pretty long.
Wow, because I downloaded it and put it on my little memory stick thing.
Yeah.
You know, that I carry my keychain.
It fit.
Then I brought it home, so I didn't have to download it from here, because we're bandwidth challenged in the haunted basement. Yeah.
So, yeah, but going back to that, though, I mean, we hope that everybody did enjoy it for what it was. It was basically more or less, I think, a venting session for a lot of people, and it was a venting session for us, too, obviously, if you've listened to the archive or was listening to it live. But Point is, though, is for a situation like that, us as broadcasters, even though this is a hobby of ours and we just do this for fun, we do have a bit of a responsibility in some ways, and we felt we were responsible for, you know, what went down in some way. So we're gonna, you know, hey, let's go on here and talk about it some more and let you guys talk about it.
And it was good that you guys got to do that, though.
Yeah.
You know, on that little short.
And from what I've seen, the feedback, people are like, hey, thanks for doing that. Thank you for letting me come on, or, you know, letting people come on and voice their opinion. So, you know, that's what we try to do around here. Unfortunately, you know, people are like, when are you going to get a phone system? Well, you know, those don't. You know, if you want to buy the rack mount for it, no problem. We'll put it together. You know,
$1,900. Yeah, we'll install it.
How much is it?
$1,900, I think.
Yeah, around there. For, you know,
for those are those phone systems where when you, like on Ground Zero, if you call into Ground Zero, Clyde Lewis's show that runs on Pioneer as well on weekends, if you call into him, they say, okay, yeah, well, the screener answers and says, you know, hey, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
All right, and then he decides if he's going
to
put you in the queue or not. And then he says, all right, I'll put you through. And when they put you on hold, you hear the show as it's being done. And then when you... and then there's like a click when they bring you into the show.
It'll click and it'll get a little bit louder.
Yeah, and then you can talk with the host, and then when it's done, they hang up.
Knock you out of the queue, and that's it. So, yeah, those little toys cost a lot of money, though, and we're trying to figure some way out to do it.
It would rock.
Let me write you a check.
Yeah, that's what we need.
There you go. All right. So, yeah, Pat Fitzhugh's coming on, though. Why don't we take a quick break?
All right.
Okay, let's chill out here. We're going to contact Pat anyways and get him on here for us. And, so just chill back. Pat's going to be on here in a few minutes.
And we'll talk about the Bell Witch.
Free to do other things? Try a stagehand tool belt. Stagehand tool belts can accommodate any task, whether you're building a stage or bringing down a haunted house.
Stagehand tools.
For all your industry needs, we have, for example, EMT pouches, radio pouches, tape measure holders, mailbags, and numerous flashlight accessories. Just go to
www.stagehandtools.com.
And see all the cool stuff that Stagehand Tools has for you.
www.stagehandtools.com.
We know where to stick it.
Hello, this is Aaron.
This is Jennifer.
And something very dark would like you to listen to Ghostly Talk.
Hi there, this is Heidi Hollis with AlienAdvice.com, where I try to give you some insight on anything that's a little bit strange. I actually have a question today from somebody named Sissy, and Sissy asks, I'm interested in aliens, but now I'm confused. As a believer in aliens, do you think that God is real, or do you believe that God does not exist? I'd love to hear what you think, because I don't know how this would affect my opinions on aliens. Sissy, I get this kind of question all the time, and I say, you know, who says there are any limits in this world of no limitations? Yes, I believe in God and aliens, too. I mean, who do you think created the aliens? It's been about aliens acknowledge there is a God, and it's just kind of a common sense type of thing. So believe it or not, there's room enough in our heads and hearts to believe in the existence of aliens and that God is real, too. So this isn't a talk between good and evil. It's just about taking in the facts, taking in the facts, taking in the facts, taking in the facts.
When I look out my window, many sights to see. look in my window. So many different people to be. That it's strange. So strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. Mm-hmm. Must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch. When I look over my shoulder, what do you think I see? Some cat looking over his shoulder at me. And he's strange. Sure he's strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch, yeah. Beatniks out to make it rich.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Karma.
Hey, everyone. Yes. So, more of our guest series,
yeah.
Which has included some phenomenal guests and phenomenal guests coming up. This is our you know, start 2004 with guests, awesome, cool guests that people want to hear from. And
this is a highlight this week. This is a highlight.
I think I've mentioned this on several shows.
We've talked about
already.
The Bell Witch so much.
Well, we talked about the Bell Witch, especially on one particular show.
Then,
you know, she keeps coming back up, keeps coming back up. And of course, one of the people who I really, really admire because of you know what his life ended up being. He became an expert on a topic. And researched it and went to the churches and looked through their records, went to the records offices and looked through their records and wrote the books and interviewed people. He became an expert. See, that's something that my life didn't take me to.
You said, jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, that's me. So it didn't. My life didn't take me to become an expert on anything. But one of the things that I would have aspired to be is an expert on something. And we have tonight Pat Fitzhugh,
mm-hmm.
who is, you know, the Bellwitch. Yeah, bellwitch.org. You know. So that's why this is tonight's thing in our 2004 guest lineup.
Yeah.
And his website is really good.
Yeah, you
really
said
good.
you had combed through it.
I couldn't help it. I mean, I have to. I found out that the story is really great. It's a great story.
It's if you ask me, it is a foundation. It's an institution to, like, you know, try as far as like giving examples of, you know, in my opinion. I know when we did our show on the Bell Witch previously, like we were saying before, we discussed, you know, well, how can we correlate this to science and what was going on here? And, you know, I know you and myself, Doug, we, you know, this is very familiar with a poltergeist-type phenomena. You know, this is really, there's a lot going on here. It's very familiar with that. So I honestly think it's a foundation to try to explain these things in some ways. This is an extreme case.
Well, this case is really extreme.
This is just, I've never read anything that was this wild.
And covered so much ground. And
so
that's why we have for you tonight... We have the fellow of the guy who runs Bellwitch.org. We have Mr. Pat Fitzhugh. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how you doing?
So far, so good.
Great.
Now, Pat, quick, just to get things started here. This your site. It's huge. It's gigantic. There's anything there is to know about the area or about the Bellwitch or about the story. I mean, you can find it at this website.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's the main goal right there.
Yeah, I mean, how did you get started on something like this? I mean, did just one day maybe you woke up out of bed and, you know, maybe you were reading a book about it the day before or something like that and said, well, you know, there's not really a source for this particular story. Wait, how did you get started on the whole thing?
Well, it all started when I was a small child, and I was fascinated by anything along the lines of hauntings and supernatural things. And my mother would always read me ghost stories before I went to bed, which, of course, made me spring out of bed plenty of times. So I did a lot of that. And then at an early age, I found out that on my mother's side of the family, there is a relationship there, seven generations back, to John Bell. So I continued listening to the ghost stories that she read me about the Bell Witch, and then I listened to some of the stories that she told me that had been handed down through the family and things like that, and I became very interested in it. And over time, I lost interest in the ghost story aspect and gained an interest in trying to learn what about the story was real, what part was assumed, and what parts were fiction. So at that point, I began... researching it, not necessarily from a ghost standpoint at that time, but from a people and places standpoint, just to get notes to compare to the various accounts out there to see what really jives and what's just speculation and embellishment and things like that. So I began the research, and now it's been well over 20 years, and unfortunately I think I've only covered about 2%.
Wow. Oh man!
Really?
The whole website, 2% of the story and the people. Well, the people are pretty much no longer living, right? Like, you don't get to talk to any firsthand accounts, or do you have firsthand accounts?
Well, actually, I know some people who have actually claimed to have communicated with these people through channeling, that sort of thing. But the accounts that I rely on are the ones that have been handed down over the years and, you know, have been well preserved. When I began my research, I began with a book called Authenticated History of the Bell Witch, written by a man by the name of Ingram back in 1894. And the reason I started with that was because it was the earliest, other than one other book, it was the very earliest account of this. And because of that, the stories had not had time to change and be embellished as they would with a later book. So I began the research with that, and I took down the names of the people and places, and then just went from there and looked in county court records, church records, and other places to, you know, basically to ascertain who these people really were, first and foremost, the fact that they did exist, and just anything else I could find.
Absolutely incredible, because, I mean, you became also a folklorist out of this, because you were sifting through a lot of tales handed down over centuries and looking for documented facts, you know, that backed up elements of the tales. So you had to sift through a lot of folklore as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I still do, for that matter. I get anywhere on the order of 20 to 30 emails a day right now, sharing stories that have supposedly been handed down over the years, as well as about 100 or so emails of news stories where people have claimed recent encounters with this thing. And, you know, as you know, since this story began in 1817, you know, that many years ago, I mean, people have really had time to really come up with a lot of stories. And then you get the snowball effect, too, where there's this particular story, and then as it goes over time, it just gets that momentum and just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yep.
And my role as a storyteller is to tell those stories and entertain people. And my role as a researcher is to go in and basically remove the hocus pocus and the BS and just stick with what facts I could find that are actually documented elsewhere.
Did you get any diaries? Like, because I know people, so a lot of people, especially young girls and stuff like that, tend to keep diaries. Did you find anything in anybody's diaries, or are those all lost to the generations?
Well, I managed to get my hands on a very good number of diaries, none of which came directly from the Bell family, however, but came from other families that were associated. And I didn't find very much in those diaries that suggested any presence of the so-called Bell Witch. But I did get a lot of information about the Bells and some of their neighbors, and I read a few references made to certain strange goings-on in the area, essentially things that could have a logical explanation but were written in such a vague manner that, you know, I really couldn't pinpoint them.
Where exactly is the Bell property located at?
Okay, well, the property where this took place, the old Bell Farm, is in Robertson County, Tennessee. It's about 50 miles north of Nashville.
Okay.
And it's been subdivided and sold over and over down through the years, but some of that land still actually remains in the Bell family.
So what's on the property now? Do they, like, build, like a subdivision over it, or is it just...
They build a Walmart or something on there now?
Yeah.
No, and I hope they don't build a Walmart, but
it
seems like everywhere you look, there's a Walmart or Walgreens popping up.
We just talked about that before the show.
I know, and, it's just, I can't use the word amazing. I think it's frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
Everywhere you see, you have a Walmart or Walgreens, and... I don't know. That's a topic for another show. I can really go off on that one. As for the Bell property, the land is still as it was nearly 200 years ago, that being agricultural use property, farmland. As of now, I believe what's growing there, or what they grow there each year, is things like tobacco.
They grow a lot of tobacco down there.
Right, a lot of tobacco, dark-fired tobacco there in the area. And the tract where the house stood is a private land and is owned by a private foundation. And that foundation includes descendants of the Bell family, both whose names are Bell, and some other surnames attached to that. And they're very, and I do mean very, adamant about not allowing anybody onto the land without permission. So it's a very closely guarded farm.
Is there a lot? Is there any Indian reservations by there by chance? Is there like an Indian community around there, or is that known for like having like Indian lands?
Okay, well, in the present day, there are no Native American reservations anywhere around there. However, back during the early days, say within the 50 or so years before the John Bell family moved to the property, there were Cherokees. And before the Cherokees, there were the Creeks and some of the Shawnees who were being displaced by some of the other tribes. And there were also some Chickasaws in the area. The reason for that was not because of their, not because of the residents, because they lived elsewhere, but because it's known as a very good hunting ground. And they hunted there a lot, and I know a lot of people have found arrowheads and other artifacts in the area. Now, way back, there was a group, it's part of the, I think, the Woodland or Mississippian culture, known as the Great Mound Builders. Now, they lived there, actually lived there in the area, and buried their dead there. And there's a huge number of Native American graves right there in the area. And those date back to, I think, around 900 or more B.C.
Wow. Do you think that has a lot, has anything to do with, like, the activity in that area, possibly?
Well, a lot of people do, and I suspect that it very well could, given the fact that the Native Americans would not bury their dead somewhere unless they thought it was sacred ground to begin with. So I think the sacredness of the ground and everything even predates the Native Americans, and they just used that holy ground to bury their dead. And, you know, there's a lot of theories out there about the Native American spirits and how, you know, they can be disturbed, the graves can be disturbed in certain ways, and it can evoke certain things, such as the spirit called Trickster, I believe it is.
Yep.
Also the name of a rock band, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah. Where are they now, rock band?
My department there. But at any rate, Trickster and some other Native American spirits, and even a lot of people who go there today, including some Native Americans that I've met, have said that they feel a very strong spiritual presence there, and it's something that gives them a feeling that this is Native American in origin.
It very well could be. I mean, that's a stronger theory, if you ask me.
Well, there's that. There's also you know, places of power. There's a lot of talk in paranormal books and stuff like that of specific places of power and ley lines, you know, where the Earth's power seems to be concentrated and things like that. So if, you know, having a place of power like that, even Mansfield, when we were at Mansfield, you know, that had all the silica and we were talking about the powerful elements of the land around there in Ohio. If this had a similar kind of makeup where it could store the power, that may be a way that such, because when you're talking about paranormal, you're talking about energies and things like that. How could something so obviously use so much energy? There was a lot of energy displaced. She would preach to people and gossip and slap people and do things. I mean, these are physical acts, and to do that, you need a lot of power.
Yeah.
So it could be a place of power.
It could be. One thing, Pat, you mentioned, Doug, that she did preach, she did speak to people. Now, one thing from reading, I didn't get her to, she didn't actually materialize when she was speaking to people. Would they just hear a voice of some sort?
Right, that's right. Almost every manifestation of the Bell Witch was a disembodied voice. There were a few manifestations, however, where people would see, like, the strange-looking black dog or, on occasion, a rabbit or something like that, where this thing would come back and say at night, in the disembodied voice, that it was the rabbit or it was the dog they saw or it was the lady hanging dead from a tree, you know, things like that. But for the most part, it was all just a disembodied voice. And what's really interesting about this voice, it wasn't like a light switch on and off. This thing grew over time. It began with just faint whispers. It could not even be understood. And then over time, time, it could be understood, and it just became louder and louder. It seemed as if it fed off the attention paid to it by others. The more and more people found out about it, the louder this thing became and the clearer it became. And some people, and I believe part of it myself, believe that a lot of this was the result of feeding off of psychokinetic energy, being the result of what they call RSPK, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, I think is what it's called. But I don't think that's the sole explanation for the Bell Witch, but I think that's a very good possible explanation for how this thing increased with the voice and power as time went on.
Well, we discussed this, like I said, on a previous show, and that's interesting that you brought that up, because it did, over time, get more and more intense, it seemed. And that's like, scientifically breaking it down, we equated it kind of like a poltergeist phenomena, because a poltergeist phenomena, they have theorized that it comes in five different stages, where each stage progressively gets more and more aggressive or intense, so to say. And, I mean...
And this also did grow in over time, yeah.
Yeah. But I never looked at it from that point where, I mean, now, when you were just saying that, Pat, I'm thinking, well, psychic vampires. They kind of feed off your energy, and they get stronger and stronger the longer they get. So if you get more and more people coming in there, or get more and more people paying attention to this particular thing, focusing their attention on this entity, it draws power off each people. So
do you think it was an entity?
Okay, the question, I believe, was, do I think it was an entity?
Yeah.
Yes, I think it was, let me back up on that one here. That's a pretty difficult question, which, by the way, is what I like, those difficult questions like that. A lot of people who have stated that this was a poltergeist phenomenon, and I believe that is the case for some of the activity.
Okay.
However, you know, looking at the story in more depth, a person will find that not only did this thing behave like a poltergeist, it did things that are not associated with poltergeist, either, you know, both not with the characteristic samples or through the progression stages. So, I mean, I think, yeah, there was a lot of poltergeist-like activity,
mm-hmm.
but I think that the speaking part and the being able to make the predictions, things like that, where it actually possessed an intelligence, pretty much transcended the level of a poltergeist.
Totally. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It was a different, that's a different kind of phenomena.
Yeah, exactly. And on the question you ask about the whether I think it was an entity, I think the root cause behind the whole thing was a single entity. However, I've theorized that these different manifestations, some of which are poltergeist-like, some of which are demon-like, some of which are spirit-like, that these are all the acts of separate entities. And I feel that, based upon the research and going on my paranormal theory of it, is that these separate entities were all acting on behalf of one entity, kind of a sorcery-type thing.
Okay.
I was going to ask if you thought that there was more than one entity acting in on that. Like,
and
if there
sounds...
was, like, it, like with the, I read on your website, and correct me if I'm wrong, the half rabbit, half dog that was seen.
Yes, that was at the very beginning.
Yeah.
John Bell was out in his farm doing some inspection of the corn, and he saw this animal that looked half dog, half rabbit like, and. Basically, what I've been able to find through the research and interviewing others is that the dog or rabbit type entity is very closely aligned with the Native American spirit trickster.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So
and,
that ties
and,
in. Okay.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of entities involved, but I think they were all summoned and commanded to do these things for a particular reason and were acting under the direction of a higher entity, whether that be, you know, just a different demon or a truly high entity, such as a spirit of a real high magnitude level. But that I don't know for sure. You know, that's just my speculation, and that's my paranormal theory. And, of course, I have a few skeptical theories, too. You know, I try to keep my research as balanced as I can, you know, not assuming that it's a ghost but not or paranormal, but not assuming that it's human either. So, you know, I just have to look at all the different theories out there.
Do you think maybe that they were, like, whatever it was upside of the building of the Bell Farm on that property?
Okay, that's a good question. And by what I've been able to find, I don't think that was the case, simply because, contrary to a lot of stories you hear about Bell Witch, the Bells did not build their home. That home was built approximately 1799. The Bells did not come to the area until 1804 and did not move into that home until around 1806 to 1807. And, of course, these disturbances didn't begin until 1817. And I think if it was a disturbance based upon the occupancy of the home or even the fact that it was built right above Native American graves, I think there would have been some earlier manifestations.
Do you think maybe that they were there, but they were possibly ignored, or maybe because they didn't give attention to it?
Well, they built a house on top of them. So.
No, I mean from like the previous owners of the property. Do you think maybe they blew it off, and because they weren't like feeding into it?
You know what? That's actually interesting because there are homes existing today where, you know, owners would say, oh, it is so haunted, you wouldn't even believe it. We got scared out of there. We ran out of there with just what we could grab. And then the next occupants noticed absolutely nothing. Yeah. So, I mean, it could have something to do,
like,
I suppose,
maybe
with how much.
With the Bells moving in there, there was something that this entity just did not like about him.
Well, that's a good question. That's something for Pat.
Yeah.
Why was it focused on John? Did you get any of that information? Because it obviously was quite, you know.
Didn't like John.
Didn't like
yeah.
him. Yeah. what does that make any sense to you?
Well, there's not a whole lot of information out there that points to any one reason. I think the entity was focused on every family member to some degree. But yes, John Bell and his daughter Betsy seemed to bear the brunt of all this, at least from the physical disturbance standpoint. According to the legend, this thing was asked on several occasions why it had such a deep-seated hatred for John Bell, and the only thing that would answer back and say was that John Bell was a bad man. You know, basically just said, hey, he's a bad man, or whatever it is, you know, that little saying you used to hear on TV some.
Yeah.
And that's basically all it would say. It wouldn't give any other reasons. And when asked about why it was tormenting Betsy, the daughter, it would just come back and say that it never said that it hated her, but only that it was being done for a reason.
Maybe he, like, did something that he...
Well, I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah, but I'm not going to say it,
yeah.
But maybe there was some, like...
There was some connection there, somewhat.
Some kind of, like, bad...
Well, talking about previous owners, for example, I was thinking while you guys were discussing that, for example, let's say the people that owned the property previous to the Bell family, would it be, I mean, this is just, you know, off the top thinking right now, but could it possibly be that these spirits are there all the time? They're always there. But maybe some people are just harder to crack their shell, so to say. Now, maybe it's the same situation with the Bell family, but maybe there's one person in that house that's a little easier to get at. Now, for example, somebody sees something and says, whoa, that was pretty wild. What was that? And then they start telling the rest of the family, and the rest of the family starts opening up.
And then they start paying attention to
the
stuff.
Then the whole family is being affected.
And then they're all being affected all of a sudden.
I mean, maybe that might be one way to look at it, I think, or it just... You know, you may have just a whole house full of hardheads. You know? I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, it's something to think about, too.
Well, that's something interesting to take into ghost hunting as well.
Yeah.
You know, when we're out and about ghost hunting and interviewing people in a
Do you know the owners of the home before the Bells moved in there?
Yeah, who built that? Who built that farm, do you know?
Well, the man who originally built it was the name of Mr. Powell, and the property before being sold to John Bell was owned to a Mr. Crawford. And I was able to find a little bit of, get a little research on these guys. And none of the information I found suggested anything paranormal was going on. But there very well could have been. What a lot of people don't realize at the very face of this is that this was only, say, 100 to 125 years after the Salem witch trials. And most of these people came from the East Coast, and some of them even from the Northeast. You know, if somebody's got a paranormal thing going on in their house, then they aren't going to say anything.
Right. They want to solve
which, the case. It's kind of an interesting story how the Bellwitch story eventually got out. But I'm saying if there was something paranormal going on, I think it's a safe bet that whoever was living there would not have openly shared it or even written about it for that matter. One important thing that you brought up was how this thing came into being or what brought it into being and the fact that the spirits were always there. And I think that's a very good point. I think it was always there. Whatever was behind the Bellwitch was always there. And I think it was attached to the land. And I think what happened is a combination of people and time, both, is what evoked this thing, brought it out and activated it. For example, we've got the Bell people there. They had different things going on in their life, some good things. There was also some tragedy going on. There was also a lot of religious upheaval and uncertainty in the area because of some new religious doctrines that had been brought about and led many people to question their own faith and everything. So there was a whole lot, when you look at the whole, there was a whole lot of emotional turmoil going on at the time right there in that general area. And I think all of that, combined with the right people being at the right place at the wrong time, evoked, or rather brought about this entity, or brought it into fruition. I guess the best way to analogize on that, you have a beehive or somewhere, and you have your bees up there, they're all behaving, everything's going fine. But then somebody sticks a stick in there and hits at it, and next thing you know, you got a heck of a problem on your hands. I think that's what happened in the Bellwitch case, and I think that's what happens in the case with many hauntings, for that matter.
You brought up an engagement with the I don't recall the name, but the entity, the Bellwitch, had told her not to marry this guy. What was that about?
Yeah, okay. That was Joshua Gardner. He was a neighborhood boy, and it was Betsy Bell's sweetheart. They had been fond of each other for quite a while and then became engaged. Well, at the time they became engaged was right at the height of all these Bellwitch disturbances, and the entity kept telling Betsy that she was not allowed to marry Joshua Gardner because it would never work out and she would never be happy. And it just kept telling her that over and over. And finally, about 1821, which is when most of this began to die down, Betsy basically said, you know, enough is enough. And she broke off the engagement with Joshua at that point. But as for why it was opposed to the engagement, I never did really answer. I just said she would never be happy.
I need something like that hanging around me.
Yeah, at the bar or something. It's like, yeah. Not that one, no.
As long
no.
as it's not going to slap me.
Yeah.
I'm pulling my covers off because
right.
I love my covers.
Why don't we take a quick break?
I think that's a good idea. Let's take a break.
Yeah, well, come back from the break. Maybe we'll discuss some more, actually, like the chronological and how the story went.
Okay.
We can go into that.
Some overview or
excellent.
Something.
Matt, hang on the line. We're going to go into a little break here. We'll be right back.
Okay, sounds good.
Great.
Radio, hosted by certified paranormal investigators Rob and Bob. Sunday nights at midnight, only on Pirate Radio. For show information, visit us at wparanormal.com.
Hi, this is Tamara Thorne, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk with the hosts of Ghostbusting, Scott Allen Duck.
MrOlaf.com. See what you've been missing out on.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Services such as web and pop-free email, image editing, and logo design at very low rates.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Free streaming and downloadable videos.
MrOlaf.com. That's www.MROLAF.videoselementyoupoopyourpantslaughing.
This is Fat Jesus, lead singer of the band Zero Recourse, and when I have arisen on a Sunday, I will check out the world through the eyes and ears of my boys in Ghost Utah.
We are having an awesome time on Ghostly Talk tonight.
Yes, we are.
We're talking about the Bell Witch,
and
pretty much anything that Pat Fitzhugh wants to talk about. Because
yes.
Pat Fitzhugh of BellWitch.org is our guest. He's our guest this week in our 2004 guest series.
I think if I slap both of you guys, you can get more in the mood of it.
You have to hit us really hard across the cheeks.
If you had a blanket on, I'd rip it off.
Yeah, because of the phenomena. The phenomena that the Bell Witch manifested it's so incredible. There's so much of it.
Yeah.
It's a huge topic, which is why, in the past half hour, we were talking about a little bit of poltergeist here and there, mm-hmm. but different kinds of phenomena, yeah. and maybe even multiple entities, mm-hmm. and working in concert like with sorcery, you know, where yeah. you summon, you know, things to do your bidding, that kind of thing. So we're like, there's so much phenomena. So do you want to talk about the phenomena? I mean, what do you want to talk about? Because it's, I mean, there's so much. Or the timeline, what would be best?
Pat, would you like to discuss the timeline a little bit?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, well, I know there's a lot of people out there that know about the Bell Witch, but I don't think they really know, like, well, at least high level, about how it all, like, kind of transgressed into where, like you said a few minutes ago, until about 1821, where things started to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, okay, I'll go over that just a little bit here to make it quick and bore you with details. The John Bell family moved from North Carolina to Tennessee in the winter of 1803 and 1804, and they settled along the Red River in what is now Robertson County, Tennessee. And they prospered in the new community, made a lot of friends, made a lot of good church connections. John Bell became an elder of the church, and their farm was very successful. And this lasted on up until about 1817, when they began experiencing this entity. And the first manifestation, or at least the first known or believed manifestation, was when John Bell was out in his cornfield and spotted this strange entity, fired a shot or two, and the thing mysteriously disappeared. And from that point, things started building up. It wasn't long until they began hearing whispers and knocks outside the house. They'd go outside and they wouldn't be able to find anyone who could have done it. And then before too long, the children began complaining of their bed covers being pulled back. And if they tried to resist by pulling the covers back up, their faces would be slapped by a seemingly invisible hand. And then the parents would come running in there with their candles and they'd look and they would see handprints all over their children's faces, but they couldn't find a culprit. And from there, things just got worse. And it got to the point where this thing would begin disturbing them early in the evening, just after dark, and not letting up until almost daylight the next day. And they grew very tired and weary, as you might imagine. And this is when the thing started speaking. And like I say, it took a while for it to start speaking. And finally, about the middle of 1818, this thing could actually be understood. And that helped a little bit, at least from the standpoint of them knowing that they could at least communicate with this thing. And between mid-1818 to 1819, this thing, all it would do was go around preaching and telling people who was good and who was bad and how they should live and things like that. And it really got on a lot of people's nerves. The thing debated the preachers a lot. A preacher would try to make some kind of biblical statement, and then this thing would come back and counter it with some other biblical passage. And that just got worse and worse, as did the torment of Betsy Bell. Then, about the early to middle part of 1819, this thing finally said, in response to the question of why are you here, it said that it was there to kill John Bell and make him die the slowest and most miserable and painful death possible. And again, as I mentioned earlier, when asked why, the thing would never say anything. It would just say that John Bell was a bad man. Well, about the middle or latter part of 1819, word had gotten around so much that even General Andrew Jackson, who later became the President of the United States, heard about it and went to the Bell Farm to investigate. As a side note, John Bell's three oldest sons fought under Jackson back in the War of 1812, so the Bells weren't completely strangers to Jackson. So he even went there to investigate, according to the legend, that is, in the latter part of 1819, and was scared off for some strange reason. And about that same time, John Bell began developing a very mysterious illness, had a lot of face twitching problems, a lot of problems swallowing and chewing, things like that. And of course the entity spoke up and said that it was responsible for that, and it was part of John Bell's slow and painful death. And John Bell's condition just became worse and worse and worse, to the point where he was having seizures, vomiting, convulsing, you know, the whole works, just every imaginable horrible thing just all at once hitting him on a regular basis. And this kept up until about December of 1820, when on December 20th, John Bell finally died. And, of course, this thing spoke up and started singing and praising and talking about how happy it was that John Bell had finally died and how he was going to rot in hell and just all, saying all sorts of mean things about the man. And then a short time thereafter was when this entity began really chastising Betsy Bell about her engagement to Joshua Gardner. Then about 1821, actually on Easter of 1821, she broke off her engagement to Joshua. And by that time, even by that time, the disturbances had diminished quite a bit. And then they continued after the breakup. The disturbances continued for about 3 or 4 months and then just faded away with the entity saying that it was going to leave and it would return in 1828, which it did. Returned in 1828 and reportedly stayed about 3 weeks visiting the people who still lived in the Bell home, which was basically Lucy Bell, John's wife, and the two youngest kids, and also paid a visit to John Bell Jr., who was living at a nearby farm. And quite a few stories exist about what happened during this short visit, but the thing left, like I say, after about 3 weeks after it returned, and said that it would leave and it would not be back for another 107 years, which would have put it about 1935. I don't really know if anything showed up in 1935. You know, I've heard all kinds of different stories, but the most credible source I have on that is my mother. She was alive and was actually a young lady at the time, living right there in the area in 1935. And she told me there wasn't anything Bell Witch related going on then, and that a lot of people didn't even pay any attention to the story about this thing supposedly returning because they were busy, you know, trying to recover from the Great Depression and things like that. But some stories claim that this thing did come back, but I haven't seen anything. And that was really the last of what the old, or what I call the original Bell Witch from the legend, manifested or may have manifested. And of course, ever since then, there have been a lot of stories come out. Basically, every day, new stories come out about people having encounters with the Bell Witch. So, in a nutshell, believe it or not, that is the timeline of it.
Well, one thing about John Bell, you said that when they asked this particular entity, why do you hate him so much? What's your beef with John Bell? She would say he's a bad man. Now, was there? Did you? I mean, I don't know if you ever come across anything that was there. Anything? Did you dig up any dirt on John Bell, so to say?
Right.
Was there something about this man that maybe was secretive that he didn't tell anybody that she knew about, but nobody else did? Did you ever come across anything like that, Pat?
Not anything that that was actually secretive. Not that I came across, but of course that's not to say that there wasn't.
Yeah.
But I did come across a few things that, you know, didn't really cast a shadow on his character, but would make some other people mad nevertheless. I'll give you two examples. One of the examples, as I mentioned earlier, Bell was a very rich man. And back then in the South, people owned slaves. He had slaves. He sold a slave to a man, charged the man too much interest, and he was accused of swindling the man out of a lot of money, and was eventually kicked out of the church, excommunicated, that is, because of it. So that's something there that, you know, may have led a few people to question his character. And another incident involved a property line dispute with a nearby farmer, and what I could gather out of that was that John Bell's basis for disputing the property line just wasn't a very strong basis. So, you know, to me, it sounded like John Bell was just a very hardcore, very stern businessman.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, because neither of those are, like, you know, karmic or spiritual.
They sound more like disagreements to me.
Yeah, maybe the entity picked up on something that he was to do.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe.
No, I'm saying maybe this entity could see something that he was going to do.
So had it not made of slow and painful death.
So maybe it's,
in the future, something else could have done.
Something that he could have, he was going to do.
And stop it. So to
and
say.
Stopped it. Maybe
so
he was going to go.
Preemptive karmic strike.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a very good question. And as a matter of fact, in one of my books, I covered that exact question. And the question was worded like, well, what if this entity was trying to accomplish something that was actually benevolent, but in order to do so, it had to keep something else from happening? And if so, what was it trying to keep from happening? And was it something that John Bell would have done later in life, or would it have been something that happened had his daughter Betsy married Joshua Gardner, or could it have been something of both? And, of course, I don't really have the answer, and I wasn't able to find a whole lot in my research, but I did look it over pretty carefully. It is a very good question.
Yeah, that's something that's what she never really gave, like you said, an exact answer, except for very vaguely saying he's a bad man.
So we may never actually really know.
Yeah,
because we don't have the Akashic records in the haunted basement.
How hard is it to get onto the property? I know you said that you have to have permission, but I mean,
serious researchers like yourself do it, or is it really really hush hush now?
Well, they of course try and keep it as hush hush as possible. And try to distance themselves away from the researchers and everybody. And, you know, I say their point in a way because, you know, I've heard that these people just bombarded with requests to get on the property, as well as people who just go onto the property without any permission. And so they try to keep hush-hush about it. You know, occasionally they'll let somebody out there for specific reasons. But, you know, like any other property, it has to be something where there's written permission and, you know, all that sort of thing.
And I don't blame them. I mean, I find that even in our ghost hunting hobby where, you know, if you run across a legend or something and then suddenly, boom, the place is swarmed with, you know,
yeah, you got everybody coming from all points of the country trying to get into this place.
Yeah,
it's a bit disturbing. I can understand that.
So it's got to be upsetting to the people on the farm.
So you have been to the property?
Yeah, I've been onto the property several times. Not any times recently. Basically, when the Blair Witch movie came out, my understanding is they had a lot of people back then who were wanting permission to get on the property, and there were also a lot of others coming out there without permission. So at that point, I just decided, well, since I had done my research and I'd already had permission in the past and had been on the property with permission, that I didn't really care about going back. I mean, I can drive by the place 24/7, and it's perfectly legal, just as long as I don't get on the property. Mm-hmm. So at that point, which was about early 1999, that was the last time I was actually on that property there. And by property, I'm talking about the property that's owned by the private foundation that is completely off limits. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the original Bell Farm was very large. It was 328 acres.
Wow.
And that has been sold and subdivided several times. And a portion, a very small portion of that, is actually accessible to the public in the form of a little city park there, the city of Adams, Tennessee. There's an old school building there, a brick school building, called the Bell School, named after one of John Bell's descendants. And there's a little city park there, and that was actually at one time part of the John Bell Farm, as well as a place called Bellwood Cemetery, which is just about, say, a quarter of a mile away down Highway 41.
You said Bellwood Cemetery?
No, Bellwoods.
Bellwoods,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I thought he said Bellwitch, too.
Yes, it's Bellwood. So, you know, my standard answer to anyone who's wanting to see the property or anything like that is just to, you know, just to visit Bellwood or go to the city park there, go into the Bell School building, have lunch at the restaurant or whatever. And by the way, they have behind the school, there is an old cabin that was built, according to experts, it was built in the 1800 to 1810 time frame. And it was built by the John Bell family, and it was on the Bell property for many, many 1800s with logs that some people feel, including experts, feel that came from the original John Bell house. And that cabin is there on the city park, and it's open, I think, about once a year during what they call the Thresherman Show, which is a farming and tractor show they have there in Adams. And you can actually see inside this old cabin.
Oh, very neat.
Now, it's got to be hard to distance themselves from the story, though, because isn't the... I saw pictures on the Internet. I don't know if they're photoshopped or not, but when you're entering Adams, Tennessee... It seems to me that
there's
you see,
sign.
Welcome to Adams, and there's a...
Home of the Bell Witch.
Yeah, Home of the Bell Witch.
True.
There's a moon with a witch on it.
Yeah.
It was on Pat's website about that.
I mean, so how... It's got to be really difficult to distance anything from the story if they're embracing it to that point where they're putting that right on their welcome to the city sign.
Yeah. Well, another thing too concerning distancing yourself from this particular story, Pat brought it up, was the Blair Witch Project.
Well, that I'm sure that didn't do wonders for the Bell family.
Actually, I saw the film. I thought it was terrible. But I found that if you bought or rented the special edition VHS, DVD, whatever you want to get, it had a documentary on it also, which was much more intriguing and interesting than the film itself. And there's a lot of references made to the Bell Witch on that particular documentary too, where they're saying there's no such thing as a Blair Witch really, but there is the Bell Witch, and they talk about the Bell Witch.
Did you work on that, Pat, or were you referenced or? On the Blair Witch Project.
No, I did not have a part in that. I'd
Thank
already
you.
Heard that it was in the making before it was actually announced. I have a few channels. I guess you would call them Good Old Boy Network or whatever you want to call it. And I'm usually brought or made aware of basically anything going on that's Bell Witch related. So I had some front end knowledge of that, but no, I didn't actually participate in the making or anything of that at the Blair Witch Project.
Well, from what I understand, that film was made very weird. It was done
cheap and made a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
it made a lot of money.
But like I said, the documentary
they got in trouble too at Cannes. I think they were putting up missing posters.
Oh no!
Throughout the city in Cannes.
Well, it was all a hoax.
Yeah,
that was. But they do make a lot of references to the Bell Witch, and I know there was a bit of a problem. Pat, you may be able to clarify on this. After that, they released the movie on domestically for people to buy. That documentary was on there, and there was people coming in droves from what I hear.
Were there problems with the city of Adams at that time?
Well, I wouldn't classify them as problems, but I would say that as soon as the movie, the documentary, the movie, and everything was released, I mean, there was a flood of people come to Adams. And I think most of your people, like your business people there, even though it's a small town, there's a couple of businesses there. You know, those people and the ones that are pretty active around town, I'm pretty sure I could speak for them and say, yeah, that it was a pain in the butt having so many people flood the place at once and having so many people ride through the countryside trying to find the Bell Witch and all that all at once. So, yeah, that, like I said, I wouldn't call it a problem, but I would say the people were inconvenienced by it to a great extent.
From what I understand, if I remember correctly from watching it, I saw a documentary, actually, another one, where it was on Adams, Tennessee, concerning the Blair Witch and the Bell Witch, the story behind the real one, the Bell Witch. And in that town, in Adams, there is a general store there, I believe. They talked to the lady who owned it, and she's like, yeah, I run out of stock. I totally ran out of stock.
Well, I guess for some folks it was probably a good thing.
It was a good money maker.
She
sold out completely. So yeah, maybe making money, but yeah, it'd be inconvenient. Very inconvenient too. But I'm glad you brought that up, Pat, because I know the Blair Witch movie and all that fun stuff did circle around the Bell Witch thing, and they didn't. I don't want to say they actually based it on the Bell Witch itself, but if you saw the movie. It was kind of wild, and it had like a lot of this. I mean, this story of the Bell Witch, that's the thing that really grabs me, is that some of the things that have been documented on it, and on your website in particular, these are things that in this field of study that we're in, that we are talking about and thinking about all the time, even when we go out to do field research, for example, some nights are very, very boring. We don't do anything. We just sit around with a tape recorder running or a video recorder running, or we're taking pictures, and really we don't get anything. And a lot of times, people, we've talked about that so many times on this show, that, yeah, it isn't about like things jumping out of walls at you or a tree trying to swallow you or some crazy Hollywood thing like that. But the story of the Bell Witch, I mean, it could really...
It sounds like it would have happened.
It could have been easily made into a script. I mean, and this is all, you know, it's documented. It really isn't, you know, I mean, there's stories, I imagine. But some of these things are so wild.
Let's take a break. I want to get the break out of the way
okay.
so that we can talk to Pat about his books.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
exactly.
So let's do... Pat, we're going to take a quick break, okay?
Okay, sounds great.
Okay,
cool.
We'll be right back.
You heard of the Internet's newest Ghost Talk radio show? Visit us on the web at www.floridaghosthunters.com. Our show airs live on Sunday evenings between 9 and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us if you dare.
Ghostly Talk, sticking our nose in the world's business.
What happened to your journalistic responsibility?
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah? And what do you think aliens are?
Christ talking about this kind of stuff.
Aliens'
responsibility is usually holding the truth back. Trying to bring it back out to people, let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Ghost hunting, my ethereal anti-drug.
We'll be right back.
wish they could have. I gave her courage before she died.
Yeah, that was something. We talked the entire way through the break, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
We sure did.
That's why we were late.
I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Karma.
And, of course, we have on the phone, we have Pat Fitzhugh, the bellwitch.org fellow.
Yeah. And this is like some really, there's so much information coming through. I mean, this is amazing.
It turns out Pat Fitzhugh is quite the author. Because he wrote the two books that I'm sure everybody knows about the Bell Witch, and a foreword to a third book.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you said you've written overall 16 books in 17 years. And you're working on two more, right?
Right. The two more I'm working on should be out mid to latter part of this year. One of which is a novel, totally unrelated to the paranormal, so I won't discuss that. The other is a story collection book of southeastern ghosts. And what I do is take some very prolific ghost stories from each southeastern state and then actually go in and research those. In other words, go through records, interview people, basically like I did with the Bell Witch, but not over a period of years, of course, and basically provide a journalistic approach and view to each of these famous southern ghost stories. But at the same time, I retain the original, the original story and the folklore aspect, to scare the hell out of folks. But at the same time, I provide a lot of other information that hasn't been surfaced before.
How much research have you done on New Orleans?
New Orleans. Yeah, did you ever get down that far south?
How far was that now?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Oh, that's my favorite city. Favorite city in the whole world. I used to try to get down there at least 7 or 8 times a year. Now I get there about 4 or 5 times a year. And, of course, Mardi Gras is right around the corner. New Orleans is one of the most haunted cities, if not the most haunted city in the U.S. Lots of ghost stories there. I have lots of friends there who are very knowledgeable about that sort of thing, and I also have a friend who runs a tour company down there that takes people to all those places. It's just a really fascinating place, and the book that I have on the Southern Ghost Stories, I'm going to have 2 different stories out of New Orleans featured there.
Oh, fantastic.
And
that's coming up the end of the year, right? The Southeastern Ghost book?
Right. Right now I'm in discussions with several people about the final title. So when I say Southeastern Ghosts, that's just my generic
working
description
title,
of the book.
Yeah, working titles and stuff.
Working title.
Yeah.
I'm, of course, going to use something with a little more pizzazz than Southeastern Ghosts.
I hope so.
About as boring as you can get.
Not for me, though. I would pick it up.
Yeah,
I'm telling
cut
you.
And dry.
Yeah, of course, I'm the host of Ghostly Talk, so I guess I'd pick it. If it had the word G-H-O-S-T in it, I'd be like right there.
There you go.
But your Bell Witch books, of course, those are quite popular. Those are almost ridiculously popular, so much so that you just had a reprinting, and I know we talked with you over the break, they're already sold out.
Oh, yes, absolutely, and I'm glad to see that they're sold out. We had these books, The Bell Witch Haunting and The Bell Witch The Full Account. Both of those were in print for a really long time, and they did pretty well, but then, the economy started slowing down, and I felt it was in the best interest of everyone just to take those out of print for the time being and then bring them back incrementally, bringing them back, for a reprint here, a reprint there, and then finally going back into regular print because the demand is certainly still out there. The most recent reprint we did was a very limited run of both books, and it was by internet sale only. The only place you could get those books was through the internet site at bellwitch.org. And we sold out of those very quickly, and we're looking forward to having those back in regular print probably within the next year or so.
Well, could you crank out 4 more copies? Signed
copies?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Can you even imagine?
I'm interested in that, especially after going to your website.
I'm sure the next printing will be like that, the whole Amazon thing and everything.
Yeah, what we're going to do with the next printing is go back to the distribution channels we used in the beginning, which were so successful. And that's, of course, through Amazon.com and available, of course, at all bookstores everywhere. And probably follow it up with another book signing tour or two.
Oh, could you come to Detroit?
Yeah, I probably could. I know I've been up there as far as on book tours. I've been up there to, Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah. Ann Arbor is huge.
Marquee City.
I think it's Marquette up there.
Oh, that's way up north.
Yeah, I've been up there. Michigan's fun. It's a good place to do book signings. There's a lot of very interested readers of the paranormal up there. I had a great time when I was there before.
Especially in Marquette.
Oh,
did you have to get to it? Did you go in the
so
winter?
It's so beautiful up there.
So say you have to go buy a snowmobile.
Yeah, but if you come up to like the Ann Arbor and Detroit area, which is it's the same southeast Michigan kind of thing, let us know. We'll take you ghost hunting.
Have
you ever been ghost hunting?
Oh, yeah. I've done that a few times. Sometimes people call me in. They want me to, I'm not sure I like the word, but they want me to be what they call their resident skeptic.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not really a skeptic, so... But you know, some people will do that because I want to, you know, with a ghost hunt, first thing I want to do is baseline everything and go back to the very beginning with all the research before I actually go out into the field. But yeah, I love a great ghost hunt, and I've seen quite a few strange things on these ghost hunting trips too. So yeah, if I go up there to Michigan, you can bet I'll call you. And
cool.
All right.
We'll go. But ghost hunting, all you got to do is. Just promise me a prime rib dinner or something, too.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You know what, though? We usually end up, though, at Denny's. And I don't think they have prime rib at Denny's, but
that's
we might be able to...
because of the time of night it is.
Oh, yeah. We always end our ghost hunts at, like, 3 in the morning, 2, 3
well,
in the morning.
Well, hey, there's nothing better in my book than a big plate of Denny's onion rings and a Denny's milkshake at 4 a.m.
Hey, we've been there. We've done that.
I grew up with that.
How about we go for prime rib first?
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
And then we'll get the onion rings and milkshake
after the hunt. I think that's a great idea.
I am a fan of prime rib. When you said that, my mouth is watering.
Yeah, I am too. But so something about the 4 a.m. You're still after a ghost hunt. You're excited and everything, but in a way you're worn out and
you're exhausted.
Just in the mood where a good bowl of greasy onion rings off with a chocolate shake is the best darn thing you can eat.
I tell you, down south, it's more Waffle House.
Oh, I've never been to a Waffle House, and you won't catch me in one of those. I've heard too many horror stories.
I've been to plenty of them.
Well, I was the one in Atlanta, and this is how weird it is, and I'm sure you've run into this a billion times. I've only been doing Ghostly Talk for 2 years, but I went down to Atlanta, stayed in a Red Roof Inn, right next to a Waffle House. The very last night, I go to the Waffle House because it was like 4 a.m. or something, and we were leaving in like 3 hours.
And you wanted to get some onion rings and a milkshake.
And so I'm sitting there, and the lady from the Red Roof Inn, from the counter at the Red Roof Inn, was sitting there, and I'm chatting with her, and I said, "Yeah, well, we're leaving tomorrow, but I was here. We went up to Kennesaw and stuff, and I like to check out the battlefields in case I'd see any ghosts." That started it. She had ghost stories like crazy. Even the Red Roof Inn we stayed at was haunted.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not kidding. Before it became a Red Roof Inn, it was something else, and some guy was stealing TVs and got shot, and evidently things move around in the office of this Red Roof Inn.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I've been to Atlanta on many occasions, a lot of times for book signings, and I had occasion a few years ago to stay at a Red Roof Inn, and I'll tell you, the only ghost I saw at a Red Roof Inn, again, this is just personal opinion. This is not a negative endorsement or anything. The only ghost I saw at Red Roof Inn was the ghost of about a 6-pound cockroach. You mentioned Kennesaw, Georgia.
Yeah.
Aaron had a great book signing. I think it was at a border store. I can't remember. And anyway, I got to actually go with a few of my book reading friends there on a ghost hunt up there. It was not on the battlefield, but it was very close to this haunted battlefield up there. And it was one of the most eerie feelings I've ever felt. And there's a lot of activity up there. Very, very good place if you want to go ghost hunting.
Oh, I believe it, because it's like ripe with just all kinds of history and tragedy. I mean, Atlanta burned to the ground at one point. And so tragedy and history and battlefields and that whole area. I bought several books while I was down there, but I didn't actually get to see a ghost. But I did get to talk about one, so I thought that was pretty cool, you know, with the lady. You've been staying at a haunted Red Roof. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that.
Bringing up burning of the town, I heard that New Orleans burnt, too.
It burnt twice. As a matter of fact, I was going to bring that up. It burnt twice, but a lot of people don't know that. Because it happened so long ago, and there is one ghost story there. I don't remember all the details off the top of my head, but where there's some people were screaming, and you could still hear them at a certain time.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Yeah.
If I got burnt alive, I'd still be screaming.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. That would do it for me. I'd be like eternally screaming, letting people know, hey, this was not the best way.
I mean, I freak out if I scald myself in the shower. I cannot imagine being burned
no.
alive.
Well, let me tell you about being burned alive here. In my next book, there's going to be one section on a particular marine or maritime disaster. I won't go into a lot of details now and spoil it, but in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to be posting that particular chapter onto the Yahoo group that's associated with my Bellwitch site, and that particular story, which happens to be a true story. We're talking over 1,000 people, and this boat's boiler blew up, and people were being the explosion knocked hot coals all over this boat and burned these people, and they would be burning up, and then another explosion knocked them off into the Mississippi River, and their bodies were already burning, and they'd make all these hissing sounds when they hit the river. Really cool stuff. And a lot of well, not cool, but that's what I mean.
Yeah,
a lot of haunted activity in that area. But I just wanted to add that in.
That's insane. That's absolutely, and that's the thing. Ghost stories like that tend to come out of tragedies and stuff like that.
We got into that like about. Well, I told you about my evening last night.
Yeah.
And alcohol free. Thank you.
Which was awesome.
I stayed hot chocolate. I was good.
Yeah.
But I ended up talking to a gentleman, and we were discussing. I just lost my train of thought.
it was the hot chocolate.
The hot chocolate got to you.
No, we were we were actually discussing the premise I was telling about, you know, types of castles in England, for example, that maybe theoretically they may be these types of psychic sponges, and we
holding
all know
on to the energies.
Holding on to the energies, or just the environment around itself. Anything, like for example, a boat's boiler blowing up and burning over 1,000 people and sending them into the river after the second boiler blows up, that's a very traumatic event right there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of energy expelled right there as far as just raw emotion. Well, it sucks. I'm burnt. You know, I don't like this. This is bad. So you're going to scream. You're going to, you're going to let people know about your distaste for the situation. Just put it that way. So, a boat.
Yeah. Well, one of my passions, Pat, is, you know, because we're here in Michigan, obviously, and we have the Great Lakes. And there's just tons of maritime-type stories about the Great Lakes.
Oh, yeah, the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Edmund Fitzgerald, the related and much more haunted and spooky one is the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
There's just tons of stories. There's ghost ships actually, you know, sailing the Great Lakes even to this day. There'll be people on Lake Michigan, you know, because Lake Michigan has, you know, that's how you would get to Chicago and Milwaukee is to sail on Lake Michigan. And so Lake Michigan has just a ton of ghost ships sailing up and down it. That never made, you know, that are still trying to make it to Milwaukee or Chicago, and just never seem to get there, and those are among my favorite kinds of stories. So yeah, ghost ships and things like that just really, really get to me.
Going back to the Bell Witch, though, briefly, Pat, I know you kind of sprinkled around like some of your ideas of what may have really went down there. But in a nutshell, though, or maybe in a conclusion, I mean, what did you think personally, if you care to talk about it, what do you think went down there, basically, as far as the story of the Bell Witch itself?
Well, I have two theories. One is paranormal, one is skeptical. I'm not quite through with my skeptical theory. I haven't put the finishing touches on it, so I'm not going to say a whole lot about that.
Okay.
But the paranormal one goes back to what I had talked about earlier, where all of the emotional turmoil in the area going on at that time evoked a dormant spirit attached to the land, and that spirit wanted to accomplish certain things and summoned other entities, and those other entities went out and did those different things, and that would be the reason behind this Bell Witch's often erratic or enigmatic, I believe the word is, behavior.
Okay.
And I think that's what it was. Now, as for what things this entity was trying to accomplish, it's really hard to say. It's just left up to the human mind and speculation, and that's not something I really like to do. So I'm just going to keep my eyes and ears open and see if I find anything that might give me exact proof of what this thing was wanting to accomplish. That is, of course, if my paranormal theory is right. So that's the basis, the basics of my paranormal theory. As for my skeptical theory, I think a lot of it, and again, I can't say too much because I still have to verify a couple of possible facts before I actually get down to the nuts and bolts of it, but I think there was a lot of disappointment and embarrassment generated by John Bell's excommunication from the church, and I think as a result there were certain things said or done to cover that up or to suggest to people in another generation that whatever bad may have been going on in John Bell's life in terms of his church excommunication or other things was really the result of something else, and this something else is, of course, this entity that they possibly made up the story about. But that's about as far as I can say on my skeptical theory. Like I say, until I get a few more facts straight on that one.
With regards to the paranormal theory, you were talking about, so to say, sorcery. We mentioned that before, and I know from my reading, the Bell Witch was a bit of a gossiper. In some situations, you said that she may have commanded different, maybe little smaller entities, so to say, Queen Bee, Bell Witch. You know, she commanded these smaller entities to go out and do these tasks for her. And I know that the Bell Witch did talk to certain people. You know who this person's doing down the street or in town right now?
This neighbor and that neighbor.
Could she? I mean, like you said, this may explain her erratic behavior. Could she have just basically sent one of these minions out, so to say, and kind of spy around a little bit and then come back and report what they found, and then that's the way she know it? Or, I mean, I'm just trying to get a basis on, how she sent these things out, if that, as far as a theory goes.
Several possible explanations. I've heard everything from the possibility of it being a human who could astrally project. I've heard of bilocation. I've heard of a lot of different theories on that. I know that in the story, most of the gossip was confined to the general area. The Bell Witch would speak up, like in church and other places, using her disembodied voice, and say what other people are doing, or say who fought with who last night, or who drank with who, or not in church, and why they're not there. Things like that. And on a couple of occasions, there were references made to the Bells about what was going on in North Carolina, which is where they came from originally. And as luck would have it, they got letters from their old friends back in North Carolina that actually confirmed some of the things that this entity had told them. So it was, like I say, generally just that area, but not completely confined to it.
Has there been, other regional Bell Witches that you know of? I think I read you know, some cases tend to say the Bell Witch of Louisiana or the Bell Witch of Texas, that kind of thing. They try and claim that this case is so remarkable that it is similar to the, you know, the original Tennessee Bell Witch. Are there regional offshoots of that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think just about every state in the Southeast has its own version of the Bell Witch story and has at some point tried to claim origin ownership of the Bell Witch legend. The Bell Witch legend itself, though, it does begin in North Carolina, and there is a slightly different version of the legend told in North Carolina. And, of course, there's Tennessee, which is where the brunt of all this allegedly took place. And then we have the Mississippi Bell Witch legend, which is basically an extension of the Tennessee legend. And the reason that is so important and why I've actually covered that in both books is because several years after the Tennessee disturbances, several of John Bell's children moved to a certain area of Mississippi, and as legend has it, they began experiencing some of the same things just over and over again. So there's a pretty wide base of people down there in Mississippi that are interested in the legend for that reason.
When you went to the Bell Witch property, did you get to talk to anybody there that had like told you of any activity going on present day?
Well, initially, yes, but that was very long ago. When I was a child, one of my father's friends lived on some property right there that was close to where the original house was, that was originally owned by John Bell. And this man had a lot of different stories about, you know, the things he had seen over the years and things that he had heard about. He gave a lot of eyewitness accounts to things he had seen, you know, in the 20th century and everything. And I put a lot of those into the books as well. Some of the more modern manifestations, they involve, like, when two kids one time tried to steal John Bell's tombstone. As a matter of fact, they did. But within, like, a week, they were both dead because of accidents. That was one story. Another one has to do with an old bridge over the Red River near the property where wagons and stagecoaches and later even cars would just stop and wouldn't be able to go anywhere at night. It would just stop right in the middle of the river. And they would see a strange colored light kind of coming down the river. That's another example, but there's quite a few stories like that. And also there's an old cave on the property where a lot of people have reported getting anomalous photographs and hearing a lot of whispering and growling sounds in the back. So still quite a bit of activity up there in the area.
Oh. We're going.
I want to go. I wish there was more of the Cape Fest kind of thing, but you're not involved with Cape Fest, right?
No, not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved with the Cape Fest activity up until 2002. And I took 2003 off from anything like that. And right now I'm in the works with some other people on a very big and a much broader scale conference thing to be held probably near the end of this year. And I think there'll be some news out about that probably in the next couple of months.
Well, email it to us, or we'll be watching your site as well, of course. And as soon as we know it, we'll put it up on our website, ghostlytalk.com, because we get a bit of traffic there, too.
May we go?
Well, do you know, I've wanted to go to a conference for a while now. It's just a matter of picking one. There's so many of them, you know.
It's a matter of getting the logistics together for all of us, too, because we all live here.
Yeah, we all have different
That's
lives.
That's what KateFest is. It's a conference.
Well, no, KateFest
was like a festival of, like kind of like the county fair type thing.
No, originally KateFest was, you know, a paranormal thing centered around the Bell Witch and Adams.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently you're doing a more broader thing now, right, Pat? There's a more broader conference to replace it?
The thing that I'm working on right now in the background, it's going to be broader. It will, of course, encompass the Bell Witch, but it's going to encompass some other things as well, and going to be in a very, about all I can say right now, is a very interesting and unique location.
Oh, fantastic. Keep us informed on that, Pat.
I have one more question. On your website, you said that there's a festival that does go down in Adams, and it's something with the bluegrass musicians and stuff. What festival is that? Is that what you're talking about, the Kate Fest?
No, Kate Fest was a paranormal gathering, gathering of paranormal enthusiasts to swap stories about the Bell Witch legend, listen to lecturers, look at various documents and things I found, things like that, just centered directly around the Bell Witch. The bluegrass thing you're talking about is the annual Bell Witch Bluegrass Festival, which is where bluegrass musicians from Middle Tennessee and surrounding areas come once a year and compete for prizes and everything.
I would love to go.
That sounds cool,
is
too.
Is that still going on, then?
I'm sorry, didn't catch that last part.
That still is going on, then?
With the Bluegrass Festival?
Yes.
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 Is the bluegrass thing going on still, do you know, or...?
Yeah, it sure is. It is held, I believe, and I don't have the information in front of me, but I believe it's in the spring or early summer each year. And then in the middle of the summer, they have what's called the Thresherman Show, which features a lot of old-fashioned tractors and other farming equipment, and that draws a big crowd as well.
It's kind of neat. That's something that we kind of
cool.
Check out, too.
I know.
My grandma's waiting.
All right. Call my grandma. We'll hook something up.
We got to close the show out, though.
Yeah, that's it. This is the end of our Ghostly Talk with Pat Fitzhugh. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Stay on the line, though, Pat. We're going to talk to you after we close out the show, okay?
Stay on for just a moment.
Okay.
Yes, and with that, the 2004
cool
guest series continues next week with... who's next week? Do you remember?
Diane Goodman.
Oh yes, Diane Goodman Larson of Alien, or I'm sorry, of Door to Atlantis, right?
Yep, Door to Atlantis.
DoorToAtlantis.com.
Oh, that's really cool.
Visit, of course, bellwitch.org for more information on Pat Fitzhugh. We've got him linked up on our website. Our website is www.ghostlytalk.com. And stay tuned, because just a couple hours from now is W Paranormal on
Hi guys, we haven't talked to you in a while.
I know.
We'll be seeing him in about a month.
They've got some guests on tonight. I can't wait to hear it. So, with all that, I am Doug.
And I'm Scott L.
And Karma here.
And, of course, Will is in house.
Sweet Will over here.
Later.
So, with that has been Ghostly Talk for this week. We'll
Take
see
care
you
yourself.
Next week.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye now.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.